Welcome back. I'm Peter St. Ange. This is a weekly roundup of my daily videos on the economy and freedom, where I try to cut through the BS and lay out what the clowns are trying to do to you and what's coming next. The Federal Reserve is sitting on an $8 trillion mountain of stolen goods that it needs to get rid of. That could strangle credit, hike mortgages, and accelerate the recession. Now, most analyses of the Fed focus on interest rates, how they pump out easy money, and then they turn around and crash the banks and the wider economy. But in 2008, the Fed invented a second huge destabilizer called the balance sheet, meaning the assets that the Fed owns. So the Fed prints money by typing zeros on Excel sheets and then loudly declaring that it is money. Then they use all those magic zeros to buy stuff. Generally, they buy government bonds and mortgage-backed securities. The stuff is an asset. It's stolen from us, of course, but for the Fed, it is an asset, hence balance sheet. Now, since 2008, especially since COVID, this balance sheet has exploded, going from hundreds of billions, that was traditional back to the 70s, to almost $3 trillion in the wake of 2008, and then soaring to $9 trillion during COVID, when there was a totalitarian lockdown to buy. The balance sheet has since come down just a hair to about $8 trillion, but for perspective, that is close to half of all the bank accounts in America, all guarded by a dragon in the basement of the New York Fed, courtesy of those magic zeros. Problem is what to do with all those stuff. After all, those zeros became money, meaning they drove inflation, diluting existing dollars like water into wine. So far, we've only gotten part of that inflation, roughly half, going by the amount printed. The rest is locked away in savings. That means either the Fed has to reduce their balance sheet, they have to sell all the stuff and cancel the zeros, or they have to accept that high inflation will continue for years as the rest of that $8 trillion leaks out into inflation. Problem is, selling all of those assets will make their price go down. That's supply and demand 101. I've talked in recent videos about the tsunami of government debt hitting markets this year, about $10 trillion between refinancing old debt and fresh deficits. Problem is, nobody is buying. So banks are not buying. They almost had a failed treasury auction a few weeks ago. The Chinese and Saudis are not buying. They're diversifying from the dollar. Meanwhile, China has its own industries to bail out. So if the Fed is also selling while Janet Yellen is running around shaking a $10 trillion cup, there is nobody to buy. So fine, don't sell treasuries, just sell the other big hunk, which is the mortgage-backed securities. That is a cool $2.5 trillion of the Fed's hoard, and it would save Janet Yellen from herself. Problem there is that the Fed has been subsidizing housing for over a decade. In fact, that's a big reason why house prices went up so much. So if the Fed now flips to selling, it could actually drive up mortgage rates that are already at the highest in a generation. Now, given the housing market is essentially frozen at the moment, specifically because of high mortgage rates, and also given that the vast majority of Americans' net worth is in their house, in the equity, the Fed is very afraid to break housing, as it should be. So what's next? By handing the lockdown gang $6 trillion to make their dreams come true, the bozos at the Federal Reserve crammed an elephant into a canoe. There is, at this point, no elegant way to get it off. The world's central banks have been on a gold buying spree this year, raising concerns maybe they think something big is coming. In raw numbers, gold buys by central banks are up 34% on the previous year, taking central bank gold holdings above the pre-Nixon record, which is a big deal. Buying has been torrid from both rich countries and poor, so the top buyers were China, Singapore, Turkey, and India. Even the Europeans are buying, more on that in a moment. Now, one of the best-kept secrets outside the gold community is that central banks have actually been buying gold ever since the 2008 financial crisis. In other words, whatever reassuring press releases they put out, their behavior says they are worried. So first, what does buying gold mean? So central banks hold a variety of assets to park their money printings without losing money and sticking taxpayers with the bill. I mentioned in a recent video that both Sweden, Britain, and our own Federal Reserve have failed spectacularly at this, losing money and leading to bailouts in Sweden and Britain, whilst the Federal Reserve is running a negative $120 billion tab with Treasury. Normally, central banks invest their thieving money printings in government bonds, partly because there is no honor among thieves, but also because there are so many government bonds, we are drowning in them, that they make up the most liquid markets in the world, meaning it is a lot easier to move a trillion in and out of bonds than, let's say, real estate or corporate debt. Thing is, for a long time, the one asset that got no love from central banks was gold. Ever since President Nixon closed the gold window in 1971, essentially killing off the worldwide gold standard, central banks have been ditching the yellow metal that used to stand as the ultimate guarantee of solvency. But now, after a decade of nonstop buys, which is now apparently accelerating rapidly, what do the central bankers know that they're not saying? Well, we actually found out last week in an interview with an official from the Dutch Central Bank, one Aert Huben, asked why the Dutch Central Bank was hoovering up gold to the tune of now 4% of GDP. He responded that gold is very useful as a backstop in the case of financial collapse, adding that most European central banks are doing the same thing. As he put it, quote, if everything collapses, the value of gold skyrockets, plus you don't have to cover it. In other words, not only is gold insurance for central banks in case they manage to collapse the entire global economy, they're also very much aware that it does not take much gold to restore a gold standard. That's the cover bit that he mentioned. I have talked about this in recent videos, how a gold standard is actually much closer than it looks, because existing central bank gold holdings can actually support a full gold standard. The reason is that if the market trusts you to redeem your gold, then it also trusts you to keep inflation low enough that you won't have to. Pair that with a soaring gold price, which remonetizing gold would do, and it's surprisingly easy. So what's next? When the central bankers are panic buying insurance, you know it's bad. Still, central banks are still at the insurance stage, not at the implementation stage. But if government spending keeps pushing higher and higher inflation, which seems a fairly good bet, then we will see more and more countries losing control and cashing in their currencies for something harder, whether that's poor countries going to the dollar, as with El Salvador and perhaps Argentina, or rich countries going to gold. A word from our sponsors. If you follow Bitcoin, you probably know that the halving is just 6 months away, meaning we're about to get a big drop in the supply of new Bitcoin. We've seen that this can send Bitcoin's price up, so selling Bitcoin now to cover expenses could end up costing you. Credit card rates recently hit 24%, but borrowing against your Bitcoin with Unchained can save you a lot. You hold your keys and you can verify that your Bitcoin is secure anytime. Don't be forced to sell the bottom and miss out. For more info, go to unchained.com and use promo code Peter to get $50 off concierge onboarding. California is going bankrupt because it turns out you cannot eat virtue signaling. In fact, it will eat you, along with the suckers who voted for you. A few days ago, the Wall Street Journal reported that after a $100 billion surplus just 2 years ago, a surplus that was squandered on everything from crony green projects to homeless encampments, California is now staring at a $68 billion hole, with another $87 billion in future deficits projected. So that comes to a cool $155 billion, enough to buy roughly 5 billion shovels suitable for cleaning human feces. For perspective, that is nearly four times Florida's annual budget. So how did California get so bad so fast? For starters, the clowns in Sacramento ramped up their controlled demolition of the largest state in the nation while squeezing the rich so hard they popped all the way to Dallas. But an odd little IRS quirk opened a loophole that the addicts in Sacramento drove a truck through. So last year, the IRS postponed tax filing for 7 months. They do this occasionally, but never on this scale or this long. They had done it for storms last December that everybody has already forgotten about. As the journal puts it, it's not clear why the IRS was so, quote, charitable towards Californians, though a cynic might wonder if there was an ulterior motive. Namely, to expand the window for brand new IRS agents to audit Californians. The problem is that instead of taking that delay into account and setting aside money, the state of California pretended it never happened, and it blew the $100 billion. It's as if work accidentally sent you two paychecks, and you spent it all, even though you know you have to give it back. Now, you wouldn't do this if you actually cared about, say, keeping your house, But of course, the ruling oligarchy in California does not care about such things. So in short, they tricked Californians $68 billion deeper into debt so the IRS can have a good hard whack at them. Yes, many of us do wonder why they keep voting for it. Thing is, IRS games is only the start because California has squeezed the few remaining productive people who remain in the state, largely to blow billions on utopias and unicorn farts. At this point, just 200,000 California taxpayers, that's out of 20 million, now fund half of the entire $640 billion budget. Nearly a million of those tax slaves ran away last year, going to states that show somewhat more restraint about strangling the people who actually pay taxes. So what's next? These gimmicks would all be good fun if California were doing well. It is not. Its largest cities are descending into Mad Max dystopias, where Kleenex boxes are locked away and women have to walk the dog in an Uber. Tech layoffs are soaring, home sales are crashing, and they're replacing that fleeing million with a tidal wave of legal migrants who get to be a permanent drain on the Californians who have to pay for them. As for the rest of us, California is a gift from heaven, a canary in the coal mine of what not to do. Unfortunately, many other states are following as fast as they can. A new paper from the Chicago Fed admits that the American people are right. Things suck. As Ebner G. mouthpiece Reuters put it, quote, "the public's downbeat view of the economy is real." Reuters kicks off with a soulful ramble, writing, quote, "whether it's the collective trauma cited by the APA or the bad vibes noted by internet analysts, there has been a clear break between the U.S. economy's performance and public attitudes about it." Thing is, now the Chicago Fed says the people are right. Paper by Jacob Herbstman and Scott Brave found that the traditional tight link between consumer and small business sentiment and between unemployment rates and wages all broke during COVID, with a plunge in the, quote, "average level of optimism" in the ensuing years. In short, lockdowns, inflation, and now stagflation have made Americans correctly worry about their future. This is beyond whatever statistical correlations may have been there in the past. To their credit, they identify a big part of that shift, the price level, as in not the year-to-year change in CPI, but what stuff actually costs and how that compares to wages. The fact that prices are so high, up 20%, even by official numbers, since Biden first stumbled through the West Wing, means life is now a lot harder than it was just a few years ago. And the fact that it is not getting worse as fast as it was last year isn't making it much better. So kicking the dog less hard does not actually solve the problem. They miss another factor, which is that one of the main economic indicators, the unemployment rate, is currently a mirage thanks to the 5 million Americans who dropped out of the labor force during COVID. Unlike people with actual jobs, people who are living on government benefits or running down their savings do not, in fact, have an optimism for the future. So what's next? While media dismisses public malaise over rising prices and falling incomes as mass hallucination, the American people who actually live that reality are desperate. Survey responses find the number of Americans who are stressed about the economy is double what it was under Trump, rising to more than 70% of those below age 44. In recent videos, I've talked about despondent millennials posting videos on TikTok wondering how people survive, and then retiring to their instant ramen with the roommates at an age their parents were already raising a family in a house they owned. As the Fed paper notes, these people are in their most productive period, when they're driven to compete, to work 60-hour work weeks, to build the skills that will in turn build up their life savings. If those people are instead stitching together DoorDash gigs with a couple shifts at Starbucks, they are not building anything, least of all a retirement. They will essentially spend their entire life living hand to mouth, never mind providing for a family. These next few years will be critical, both for the economy and for how they respond to it. If the past is a guide, whatever they do to fix it will most likely make it worse. This podcast is supported by our sponsor, MoneyMetals.com, the most trusted bullion dealer and depository in the United States. Money Metals is known for its competitive pricing, excellent customer service, and fast delivery of physical gold and silver, as well as their educational content and strong advocacy for sound money policies at the state and federal level. They've set the industry standard for selling, buying, and storing precious metals. If you're looking to help protect yourself against inflation and market turmoil, I hope you'll give them a try. To learn more or to buy your physical gold and silver, go to moneymetals.com. Global financial markets are, quote, confused right now, according to CNBC, because they have no idea what's coming next, as oil, gold, and government bonds tell completely different stories about what's next for inflation and recession. CNBC couches this all as a great mystery, but the answer is very simple. The Federal Reserve is the 800-pound gorilla, and what it does dominates everything else. Almost makes you wonder if maybe central banks don't actually stabilize an economy, which is their alleged job. Perhaps they are the instability. So first, the data. Two of the most important indicators of recession are oil prices and gold prices. When a recession comes, oil prices crash because a slower economy doesn't use as much oil. So factories might go part-time, people stop taking trips, millions stop driving, perhaps some of them because they don't have a job. In 2008, for example, oil prices plunged 80%. Note, that's a big reason for the Fed's so-called victory over inflation over the past year. Oil prices are crashing because oil thinks a recession is coming. Gold, meanwhile, is a hedge against recession as well as inflation. It's the perfect asset for stagflation, in fact. Went up 25-fold in the 1970s. So the inflation part is easy. Gold is limited, so if they print trillions of confetti, gold is worth more measured in confetti. And recession is more about insurance. So recessions typically drop stocks about 40 or 50%, so gold is a good way to wait out the storm. In fact, at the moment, oil prices are crashing and gold is soaring. So gold's up 22% since October of last year. Bitcoin, of course, confirmed that, doubling over the period. While oil prices are down 25% in just the past couple months since September, and they're down almost half since the 2022 peak. So far, so clear, recession is coming. The problem is treasuries, government bonds. These are the main way that banks and pensions hold cash, since bonds are like cash, but they actually pay interest. Now, normally, if a recession is coming, interest on bonds, the yield, should come down, because people expect that the Fed is going to cut rates to juice the economy. But that's not happening right now. So there are three possibilities. One is that we are really going to get that fairy tale soft landing that Jerome Powell is selling. We soft land, the Fed can keep the rates high, we rebuild. But there are two alternatives that are much darker. The first is stagflation, meaning it's a hard landing, but unlike most recessions, the Fed cannot cut rates because it's afraid of inflation. We'll just have to let everything go to hell and crank out press releases how wonderful things are. The other is actually worse, which is sovereign debt, as in the market starts hiking yields because it is getting worried that maybe federal debt won't be properly paid. You'll know that happened if they do joint conferences with Jerome Powell whispering sweet nothings, even as Janet Yellen stumbles through her full faith and credit routine. So what's next? I've argued that our most likely path from here is a repeat of the 1970s, with inflation and recession hitting together. That would send unemployment soaring even as inflation continues sapping what paychecks remain. As for confused markets, whatever way it pans out, a lot of people will lose a lot of money. For that, we can thank a central banker. It's Christmas on Wall Street as the long-awaited pivot is here, with Jerome Powell signaling that they are giving up on inflation and turning to that long-promised recession. The so-called Federal Reserve dot plot, which measures Fed members' rate projections, went dovish, meaning inflationary, for the first time since the pandemic. Bloomberg was downright giddy, trumpeting that the, quote, great monetary pivot of 2024 is nigh. Stocks, bonds, and currencies all soared as financial markets filled up the punch bowl and lined up the Coke and hookers just when Joe Biden's election campaign needs them most. All courtesy of a Federal Reserve that apparently has traded in the Paul Volcker baseball cards for a very clever inflation-fighting strategy of let her rip and hope for the best. Indeed, Mike Alfred ventured that Janet Yellen and the big guy himself may have, quote, intervened with some pointed dialogue with Jerome Powell about their ability to punish the Fed if it does not play ball. Markets reacted like a San Francisco junkie on a UBI, with literally everything going up but the dollar, including gold, which rallied $60 in the space of a few hours. As Bloomberg approvingly put it, quote, virtually no corner of financial markets was left out. It was the biggest one-day rally since 2009. Why? Because despite ongoing inflation, Jerome Powell just signaled the green light for a speculative mania. See, last year was a lean one on the street, with Dark Jerome warning that, quote, pain is coming, as he strangled financial markets to clear room for the federal government to spend everything their dark little hearts crave. Now, Jerome's apparently traded his dark warnings about exuberance with all but begging Wall Street to exuberate away. The problem is, given inflation is nowhere near licked, this is essentially the Fed giving up. Recent videos have worried about the Fed repeating its catastrophic 1970 stagflation when it eased in the eye of the storm and set off another inflationary crisis. In fact, looking at core inflation, right now it is merrily running at double the Fed's target. Yet, Jerome is now desperately flicking matches on the next tissue fire boom. So what's next? The Fed at this point is praying for a soft landing, the deus ex machina to save institutional independence. The biggest problem is that it's not going to work. I've mentioned in recent videos how the Federal Reserve has never, in its 110 years of existence, pulled off a soft landing. The cuck media hypes it every single time, but it is a myth, a mirage, a fairy tale to help Wall Street traders sleep. In fact, the Federal Reserve has a single recession playbook: hike till it breaks, and then flood money to bail everybody out. The Fed just advanced us to the next stage of the 1970s. What comes next is mass bankruptcies, layoffs, and daily articles about the famous misery index that we thought were a distant memory. Read the whole article at profstange.com with charts and everything. The annual Taxpayer Slaughter Climate Summit, known as COP28, just ended. And inventor of the internet and noted climate gadfly Al Gore is furious. This year was more entertaining than most, since it was held in fossil fuel utopia Dubai, with conference host Sultan Al Jaber giving a speech how ending fossil fuels would put humanity, quote, back into caves, adding that there is, quote, no science to support the need to restrict fossil fuels. This is all, of course, true. Cheap energy is how the rich countries got rich in the first place, and without it, they would become poor countries. Meanwhile, recent data from the EPA itself found that there has been literally zero warming in 81% of weather stations since 1948. Many of those that did show warming were artifacts of location. So a field got turned into a parking lot, and presto, the temperature went up. Even so, more stations actually showed a decline in temperature since 1948, so 329 stations, compared to those that showed an increase of just 203 stations. Another recent study says that plants actually, it turns out, absorb 20% more carbon than thought. That is a comically huge difference given 100-year climate models, suggesting that so-called climate experts actually have no idea what they're doing. They are pulling it out of their hats. In other words, forget global warming. We need to start either talking about the falling temperatures and carbon-hogging plants, or, more likely, we need to talk about how utterly useless both the data and the climate models themselves are. Perhaps someday they will figure it out, but at the moment, we don't actually have any credible climate data. It has paid off professors writing marketing copy. Still, sane or no, the Sultan's comments were apparently not something you are supposed to say at COP28. The UN Secretary General characterized them as, quote, incredibly concerning, mostly because the United Nations is a control-seeking communist organization who, oddly enough, is funded by the US government, which is not supposed to be communist. Despite the Sultan's fleeting moment of sanity, the rest of COP rolled out pretty much how you'd expect: a promise to, quote, phase out fossil fuels by the rich countries, so China and India can replace them fivefold with coal and use it to gut our manufacturing base that, after all, is not staffed by New York Times journalists. The goal, again, courtesy of the UN Secretary General, is, quote, not to reduce, not to abate, but to phase out. As in, you will have no heat, you may have no cooked food, but you will be happy. So what's next? I've mentioned in recent videos the eye-bleeding crony trillions that the climate industrial complex has at its disposal, an amount that is growing very fast. It will continue deploying that money to frog march you into the cave-dwelling utopia until taxpayers cut them off. Thanks for listening. Remember to subscribe to get next week's episode right in your inbox and visit petersanonch.com for videos and articles. Okay, we'll be watching. See you next time.